Hey there, it's Joshua. Before we start the podcast, a quick announcement for our listeners in the Washington, D.C. area who will be in town around November 29th. You can catch me live on stage alongside Michael Barbaro, the host of The Daily from the New York Times. We'll be joined by Peter Baker and Michaela Bouchard from The Times and Katty Kay from BBC News, talking about the latest news, and we'll give you some insights into how we do what we do. Again, that's November 29th at the Lincoln Theater in Washington. For tickets and more information, go to the1a.org. Thanks.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, in for Joshua Johnson in Washington. On the show today, the campfire in Northern California. It's now the deadliest and most destructive wildfire in state history. Last night, officials raised the death toll to 42. There are still more than 200 people unaccounted for. There are over 6,000 structures destroyed. Much more after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
This season of the StoryCorps podcast from NPR is all about reunions. And on this week's Veterans Day episode, friendships forged on the battlefield and the road to reconnecting decades later. Episodes are available every Tuesday.
The fire engulfed a town called Paradise, which sits right at the foothills of the Sierra Nevada mountains. News footage showed the terrifying destructiveness of these fires. Closer to the coast, helicopters were seen dropping retardant on a fire in Simi Valley, right along the 118 freeway as cars swerved to avoid the flames. Joining me now from Chico in Northern California is Jody Jones, the mayor of Paradise. Mayor, I appreciate you coming on at a difficult time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Also joining from Pasadena, California is Matt Tinoco. Matt's a reporter for KPCC Public Radio in Los Angeles. Matt, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you.
Mayor, we've seen some devastating photographs and video footage from your town as the fire swept through and the aftermath. What's the scene like in Paradise right now? How are your residents holding up?
Well, none of the residents are in Paradise. They've all been displaced, and no one's being allowed back in right now because there are crews, many crews up there working on trying to make it safe so we can get our residents back. There are virtually every telephone pole in town, every utility pole, they're all down. So all of the, there's a lot of electric wires that need to be made safe. And PG&E's putting up new poles, and there's dozers and snow plows moving debris and trees out of the road so that we can let people come back in at least to view their homes.
Mayor, your home is no longer standing as well. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'm very sorry to hear that, and I want to thank you again for taking the time to be with us at a very difficult time for you and your community. Can I ask you to give a sense of the feeling of walking through your town, through the streets right now?
Well, I was able to go back and look, and the residential neighborhoods are just devastated. What they're saying is true. About at least 90% of the homes are just burnt to the foundation. There's nothing left. Our business district fared a little better, I would say maybe 50%. We do have a good core to rebuild on. We still have our hospital, our library, our post office, our town hall, our police department. Two of our three fire stations are still standing. Two of our three grocery stores are still there. The Kmart's still there. And the Starbucks is still there. So it's not like everything is gone, but the vast majority of homes are.
The Starbucks is still there. That's a little bit of comfort anyway. What are conversations like with your constituents, your residents, as you meet up with them and talk to them?
It's actually very heartwarming. People have started a movement called Paradise Strong, meaning we will come back. Most people that I've talked to intend to rebuild. We want to make Paradise Paradise again.
Now, Mayor, you had a wildfire pass through your town of Paradise in 2008. This was not your first brush with wildfire. And back then, you enacted a pretty detailed evacuation plan. Some news outlets have reported that the evacuation plan did not work well in this case, or at least that people didn't stick to it, didn't stick to the plan that they had. What happened at that point?
I don't think that's... Well, so typically when you evacuate, you're evacuating... You have a fire on one edge of town, and so you're evacuating a zone or two, and maybe if the fire gets a little further, then you evacuate another zone. In this case, the winds were so strong that they blew fire all over town, and... it happened so quickly. There was an evacuation notice for one zone closest to the fire, and within 10 minutes, the entire town had evacuation notices. So if you're trying to evacuate every zone with 26,000 people onto your roads at the same time, I don't know any town that would have the infrastructure to just take that many people at once. But I believe that our plan did work. If we had not had that plan, we would have been, a lot of lives would have been lost. We had practiced the plan. We even did it one morning during morning commute just to show people how it worked so people would know ahead of time. There was just so much traffic on the roads at one time that it took a long time. But I was in the upper end of Paradise when it happened. It did take me about 3.5 hours to reach Chico. And so I drove through the entire town during the evacuation. Most people were being very calm, patient, polite, letting the car, because all the side roads are coming into the one road that's contraflow going out of town. So it just took a long time, but things would have been way worse if we had not had that plan.
And a sudden onslaught of the fire to your town, it sounds like. Mayor, I might be a little soon to ask you this because cleanup is barely underway or maybe not even started. Do you have a sense of what's next, what happens now for you and your town?
Well, the sheriff is still in there looking for people, of course. But there are cleanup crews working very hard, and PG&E's in there. They have crews from all over the state in there, securing things, making it safe. And our first order of business is trying to get to the point where we can allow our residents to go back in, view their homes, if their home is still standing, retrieve items. If it's not, have some closure. And we're hoping to be able to do that sometime in the next few weeks.
Well, Mayor, like I said, it's an awful time for you and your town, and I want to tell you again how much we appreciate you taking the time to keep us informed when I know you have so many other things to do. Mayor Jody Jones of Paradise, California, hang in there. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, let's move down now to Pasadena, where Matt Tinoco is on the line, reporter for KPCC, because, Matt, you're covering the Woolsey Fire down in Southern California. What's the latest situation down there? I think I read that evacuation orders have been finally lifted as of last night.
That's true in some locations, but not everywhere. But we are getting close to the point where people are going to be able to return to their homes. It just kind of depends on exactly where you are. Because, again, the Woolsey Fire affected a huge geographic area here in Ventura and LA counties in Southern California. The official count, the most recent one, is it hit 94,000 acres, hit about 435 structures estimated, and right now where we are at is 30% containment, which containment basically means no forward. In firefighters, if an area is contained, firefighters expect no forward momentum, and we're at 30% right now, and the expected goal for full containment right now is November 15th, which... That's a couple days out.
Yeah. Well, Matt, you've been out in the community, of course, talking to homeowners, people in Southern California, as the Woolsey Fire, as you said, is only 30% contained. We have some of the voices of people you've been talking to. Here they are.
That's a tragedy. Just the pockets that got destroyed is just devastating.
Fires come with the territory. This is just a very different kind of fire.
It was like an apocalypse yesterday. It was terrible.
It's just that Point Doom has never historically burned. That's its first time.
It's the United States of America. We'll rebuild, and I feel really sorry for the people that lost their homes and worse, and we'll help them out.
Matt, I heard one woman there say that fire, I guess I'm paraphrasing, is kind of a fact of life around Malibu and Point Doom north of Los Angeles. Many of the people you talked to been affected through fires before?
Yeah, I mean, it basically came down to if people have lived in, I was specifically in Malibu, if they've lived there for more than about 10 years or not. Those who hadn't been here, weren't here 10 years ago, this was their first time. But I talked to many residents who have been in the region for decades, and it is very true. I mean, right now, like Malibu last burned in 2007, and then before that, the last big event was in 1993, and you can go back it's not an uncommon experience. It is expected, it is regular, because basically as brush builds up in the Santa Monica Mountains, well, eventually, sooner or later, a fire is going to come and burn through, especially when it's being driven by winds that are blowing offshore towards the ocean. Once a fire gets started up in the mountains, it basically just burns straight through to the Pacific Ocean. And that's happened many, many, many times before. And basically, people are there, and they expect it. They know what to do. They know to leave. Some people fortify their properties to an extent, but basically, once the fire line comes, you flee to the beach. And that's what a lot of people did.
Well, in just a moment, we're going to talk about some of the dynamics at play in California and people who build right at the interface of towns and the wilderness in the West in places like California. But Matt, I'm going to let you go. Are firefighters going to get any help from the weather in the next couple days?
We are under a red flag warning until later today, the end of today, end of Tuesday, which red flag warning basically means very low humidity and very high winds. And that warning is still in effect until, I think it's 5 p.m. local time today, Tuesday.
So
once that's over, then it'll be a little bit easier.
And that could mean then that the evacuation orders that have been lifted, Southern California is not quite out of the woods yet.
We're almost there, but yes, that's accurate what you just said.
All right, Matt Tinoco, KPCC reporter. Matt, thanks for joining from Pasadena in California. We do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, coming up, we're going to focus on the role of climate change in these destructive fires and the policy war between California and the White House as residents in California and their government struggle with not only climate change, but what it means to build homes right at the interface of luxury communities and the wilderness, which could burn. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A on WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the YMCA, a nonprofit committed to strengthening communities. The Y believes the zip code you're born into shouldn't determine your destiny and works to create opportunity for all, no matter who you are or where you're from. Learn more about the impact of your donation at ymca.net/forabetterus. The Y, for a better us.
I'm Bob Boylan with the All Songs Considered podcast. 50 years ago, the Beatles made a mind-boggling double album. Hear the White Album as you've never heard it before. From demo tapes to brand new mixes. This week on All Songs Considered.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about the wildfires in California now, the most deadly in state history. Joining me is climate scientist Noah Diffenbaugh. He's professor and senior fellow at Stanford University. Professor, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And also in the studio with me now is Evan Halper. He's national reporter for the LA Times based here in Washington, D.C. He covers the increasingly complex relationship between California and the White House. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We have been hearing from many of you. Zoe emails President Trump's claim of poor forest management as a reason to deny disaster relief funds to California makes utterly transparent his politicized attitude toward federal spending. His sympathy and generosity were much greater for Red State Houston during Harvey. Becky asks, does California practice controlled burning? If not, why not? I understand it's very effective in reducing the risk of wildfires. And Ken writes on Facebook, we've had decades to come together as a country and deal with man-made climate change. Instead, we have bickered. And those are all issues we're going to get to with my two guests. Noah, let me start with you since you're there in California at Stanford. What forces are at play more chronically with the wildfires currently burning in California? These certainly aren't the first. Just back in August, I was in Southern California, fires raging in Riverside County there that turned the sky black with smoke. What's at play here?
Well, wildfires certainly result from a convergence of different conditions. Clearly, there always needs to be ignition, and humans are the primary cause of ignition here in the West. and where we build, how we build, that, you know, how, the proximity to flammable fuels, you know, at that interface between communities and open space. But also, you know, what we're seeing increasingly here in the West is the role of climate change. And, you know, the area burned in the West, you know, on an annual basis has increased around tenfold in my lifetime. I'm in my mid-40s. So you know, we're seeing that the you know, global warming is drying out these fuels. We're getting record levels of what scientists call fuel aridity, essentially the, you know, how dry the fuel is on the landscape. In these fires that have been happening in the last few years here in California, we've seen record levels of fuel dryness for the time of year. So we're in a new climate regime now, a new normal, as Cal Fire calls it, where we can expect wildfires throughout the year. There is no longer a defined season. The hotter summers and autumns that we're experiencing are drying out those fuels and increasing the risk of wildfire.
Now, let's talk causation, or at least correlation, if you like, because one thing that I've heard climatologists describe is the direct correlation between average temperature and fires, so that it's not like with hurricanes where it's tough to predict storms based on average temperature rise. You certainly can't blame any one storm on global warming. But that in this case, that higher temperatures mean hotter fires, more intense fires, and the longer fire seasons that you're describing. Can you explain that connection?
So, you know, the most direct link that we have evidence for in terms of global warming and wildfires is in this dryness of the fuels. And so, you know, you can imagine when, you know, how vegetation, you know, when it's hot, when there's a lack of precipitation, the vegetation dries out. And, you know, scientists can measure how dry that vegetation is. We can do that in real time, you know, and the vegetation dryness in the, you know, in California right now is near record levels in many parts of the state, including in the vicinity of Paradise. And we can also measure that dryness going back in time. So we can use measurements that we have of the temperature, of the precipitation, of the humidity, the amount of moisture in the air, the winds, and use that record, the satellite record, the instrumental record from thermometers and rain gauges, weather stations, and we can reconstruct that fuel aridity going back in time. And what's clear is that fuel aridity is increasing. And you know, we have very strong scientific evidence that global warming has substantially contributed. So for that, I mentioned that the area burned in the West has increased around tenfold in the last 40 years or so. Global warming has contributed around half of that increase by drying out the vegetation. Mm. So we're now in an environment where when ignition happens, we are much more likely to have these very strong, fast-spreading, intense wildfires.
Well, there's some of the science and some of the evidence. Let's talk about some of the policy that's affecting Western fires and the fires in California. Evan Halper, the president issued some tweets, of course, essentially blaming California and their forest management practices for the fires. What are the main sticking points between California and the administration, maybe outside of the invective of a presidential tweet?
Well, when it comes to forest fires, the president has sort of picked up the line of some Republicans in Congress who want to give logging companies more power to do clear cutting in this forest land. The science on that is really not with the side of the logging companies. And what the president is trying to say is he's conflating these forest fires with the lack of thinning in the forests, and basically saying that California should be allowing a lot more clear cutting. Obviously, scientists are saying this is not going to help with the forest fire problem. What would really help with the forest fire problem would be action on global warming, which the administration is reluctant to take.
California Governor Jerry Brown had this to say on Sunday night as the state gathered. He was in a press conference and wanted to hear from the governor about their immediate and long-term future.
This is not the new normal. This is the new abnormal. And this new abnormal will continue, certainly in the next 10 to 15 to 20 years. And unfortunately, the best science is telling us that dryness, warmth, drought, all those things, they're going to intensify.
There is the governor, Evan, telling California residents that he said new abnormal. This is your future. And a government in Washington, at least on the rhetorical level, that says climate change is a hoax.
Yeah, California has been taking the lead in climate action since, you know, the Bush administration when they passed their global warming law. And the whole idea was to be a call to arms, to push the federal government to take action. The federal government did take a lot of action under the Obama administration. But obviously, as we all know, under this administration, the mantra is energy dominance, and energy dominance not through renewable fuels, but through fossil fuels. And the administration is pushing back on a lot of the things California is doing and actually trying to change federal laws to inhibit California from acting on climate change and also giving states who don't want to take that action a pass not to.
The president also in his tweet or in one of the tweets threatened to withhold funding to the state of California if they didn't go his way on forest management. I think California, the governor, still got that disaster designation that frees up federal emergency money.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's interesting, the point that your listener Zoe raised about sort of the president's sympathies and generosities being with only red states. In this case, his tweet suggested, yeah, he's going to take federal funding away from California, but then he very quickly declared the authorized the emergency funding and gave California everything it asked and then sent a very nice tweet saying his, you know, thoughts were with the state. So it's hard to tell what's going on in his mind.
Now, Evan, what about funding, though, for forest management versus fire management in California? Because we heard yesterday that there are basically two pots of money, that money for forest and underbrush management has basically been robbed to deal with fire suppression, which gets out of control, and then you get in a death spiral, right?
Yes, and this has been an ongoing fight in Congress, and it gets back to what I was saying before about the Republicans who want, who are siding with the logging companies. They want to allow more clear cutting in these forests, and Congress has been unable to change the funding mechanism to free up more money for prevention because of this gridlock over whether environmental laws should be changed to allow more clear cutting.
All right. Now, Noah, listen to this from there in California, because we got this voicemail from Brenda down in San Diego, who had this to say about the fire situation in your home state.
Hello. In the discussion regarding the wildfires in California, I do agree that the encroachment of neighborhoods into the fire-prone areas can be a problem. However, I live down in an area that has been established for 40 plus years, 50 years, and we're far from the mountains. And yet we had fires 10 years ago that came from the mountains down into our neighborhood and caused complete devastation. Our immediate neighborhood lost 300 homes. So I see this more as a climate change issue than it is a forest issue.
Now we got a tweet from one 1A listener who says, does it make sense to rebuild in some of these places? Noah Diffenbaugh, you're hearing from a couple of California residents there. Brenda seems to agree with you that building at the interface between communities and the wilderness, as that interface continues to move into the wilderness, is just a risk in a lot of dry places. Now she says that the fire zone, as you say, has expanded vastly in her years in California. What are the risks now at the interface, and how are people who do zoning or talking about land use in California dealing with this?
Well, so California has been very proactive in land use planning, in particular with fire risk in mind. And in fact, we've had a law on the books since 2012 that requires land use planning to integrate fire risk management perspectives and practical actions. And California has heavily invested in that risk management through grants to communities throughout the state. And so we've seen many communities throughout the state continuing to update their land use planning, specifically with respect to fire risk management. And we've seen the state invest heavily financially and with other resources.
Noah, take one quick pause there just for me to tell people that I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A. Noah Diffenbaugh, go ahead. You were talking about the interface between homes and the wilderness in California.
Yeah, so your listeners were asking about risk and you know, with wildfires and with other climate-related risks, it's really a combination of the physical hazard, the wildfire, the flooding, the heat wave, right? All of those physical hazards, how those physical hazards intersect with exposure and vulnerability. And, you know, if you go throughout the western United States, what you find is communities that are at the interface, you know, this urban wildland interface, as many people call it. So that really is how we live in the West. And, you know, their estimates is something like a third of homes are at that interface here in the West. And so, you know, I think that is how communities are situated in the West, and it's part of the attractiveness of the West. So we certainly have exposure. The vulnerability matters, and you know, we heard from the Paradise Mayor, even with the tremendously tragic loss of life in Paradise, how that tragic loss of life notwithstanding, how effective that evacuation plan was. And if you think about, as the mayor was describing, a city of 26,000 people, mobilizing that in such a that many people in such a short amount of time. And if you think about 90% of the homes being destroyed in a very short amount of time, and having that evacuation, you know, she talked about the planning that went into that, the practice, the rehearsal that went into that, practicing at different times of day so that the residents were familiar. You know, that kind of planning and preparation is really critical for reducing vulnerability. And so all three of those dimensions come together, the physical hazard, and we know that climate change is increasing the risk of wildfire just from that physical hazard. We know that we're exposed. We have a growing population, and that development creates exposure. And then the vulnerability. And again, California has invested heavily in helping communities to decrease their vulnerability. And we're seeing that with this, as the risk from the increasing hazard accelerates, we're seeing that reducing vulnerability is even more critical.
We got a tweet from Kelly who says, decades of government inaction escalated the prevalence of some of these disasters. Trump ignores climate change. The GOP denies science, letting corporate interests dictate policy. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Evan Halper, that's one perspective. But what are conservative politicians in California who represent the very same people whose homes might be burning, you know, down in San Diego County, Southern California, where the Woolsey Fire is burning, and a lot of other places as well? What do they say to constituents?
It gets back to the president's tweet. They talk a lot about need to thin the forests. They blame the undergrowth and the density of trees in these forests as being a contributing factor. Again, the science doesn't necessarily back them up, but that is an argument they're sticking to, and it's one that was raging in Congress before these fires happened.
Did you see any signs in the midterm elections? Now, we saw that there was like this mini blue wave in Orange County, Democrats taking over places where Republicans had been strong in California. Was anybody talking about this issue in a substantive way that showed that a lot of voters are coming around to a different view?
Well, yeah, in terms of climate change, you actually did start to see in a lot of places Republicans join this Climate Solutions Congress, that Climate Solutions Caucus, excuse me, that that some politicians in Florida started. It gave them sort of a place where they can say they're concerned about climate change. Of course, Congress did nothing on climate change, so there was a lot of complaining that it was election year environmentalism, but it was interesting. Some of the politicians, you had some conservatives in California join this caucus, people who had like a 4% lifetime rating from the League of Conservation Voters. So they're feeling the political pressure. Whether they're actually doing anything about it other than window dressing is another question.
Yeah, joining the caucus is something. It's not quite sponsoring a bill or demanding that a bill get passed. But anyway, we'll see if there's action. And that's Evan Halper, national reporter for the LA Times based here in D.C. Evan, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Noah Diffenbaugh, professor and senior fellow at Stanford University. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.